and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are, of course, joined by Alicia from the Lorehounds. How is it going? Thanks for finishing out this week with us.
Thank you for continuing to have me here with you.
It has been a pleasure. We've been very much looking forward to, you know, having you on getting your insight into some of our theories about the whole Jessica Alia stuff and everything, getting to hear a little more about your thoughts on Dune on a minute-by-minute format. So
This has been, you know, we were talking, I think, off mic, or I don't remember, one of the previous episodes maybe, about how this is a weird bunch of episodes because it really... It covers kind of three distinct things, overlaps them. But it's also, have you heard David has a thing about at the 1 hour mark into a movie, it's where things shift and change?
No, I don't think we have.
This is, at this point, we are at the 1 hour mark. And it's not just one big shift and change, but it's a series of shifts and changes with, you know, Paul going south with the Spice Depot blowing up and how that's going to affect Raban and everything else. And yeah, so it's interesting to get to talk about this.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that's like the movie going audience, like that's about all they can take of one story before they have to shift it around and go into your next like storyline. Well, we got one more minute to talk about, and I think this one might be a smidge of a thin minute.
It's definitely I have more notes from Art and Soul about one thing than I do the whole minute, if okay. I'm gonna be honest with you. So all
right. Well, let's dive into it. We are, of course, talking about minutes 64 through 65. I still cannot believe we are 65 minutes into this movie. 65 episodes through, almost, anyways. So we're picking up with the actuary goon from yesterday, talking to Lord Raban. He says, "My Lord Raban, you should not leave the security perimeter."
And then Dave Bautista has such a good yelling voice. Because all of his lines are just yelling in this whole minute.
Now we have in the past praised Dave Bautista for his, you know, stepping out of like wrestler mode and being able to, you know, actually act with a fairly good range,
right?
In a lot of different things that he's done. This is him dipping straight back into wrestler, like WWE or whatever.
Kind of.
So this is not my hot take that I referred to in the last episode, but a milder hot take is that I do not think this is his best acting in this movie at all because of the whole, it's just the yelling. Just the yelling. Question.
I was going to say, we definitely talked about how like, some of his other roles are huge standouts compared to this, but even still, like there is, I want to say it was maybe 15 or so episodes ago. Basically whenever Raban is being summoned by Vladimir, as Vladimir is like finishing killing off his attendants and sinking back into the goop, or whatever, the fear that Dave Bautista shows. And, you know, the moment where Raban isn't just like the most powerful or the most scary man in the room is definitely a good, you know, kind of break from that wrestler look and everything. But we've talked about on this show before, Dave Bautista's, albeit smaller, but very important role that he had in Blade Runner. When he first worked with Denis Villeneuve, and the range that he shows in that role is huge, and that whole scene is fantastic. Absolutely love that.
Question about this movie, the spice minion, is that the same guy that he just like kills later when he annoys him again? He's just like, tell me one more time what to do.
Well, so I, is that, is, Okay, so maybe let me make sure we're talking about the same person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I initially thought it was the person from the map room earlier,
mm-hmm.
where he said maybe you should get some rest. And I think, is that the same person you're talking about?
Oh, maybe.
Like, my lord, you should get some rest. And just,
yeah,
like,
that he just like face slams into the table.
He just like,
is that the same person?
Did he just like slices him, just kills him on the spot, just for telling him to maybe he should think about what he's doing?
Okay, no, different people then.
I think that's later in the movie.
Okay, got it.
So this guy is the one, going back to the map room where Dave Bautista, or where Rabban, whichever one. I'm all fucked up today. Where Rabban like grabs him by the back of the head and like face slams him into the table. I think this attendant is the same one that mouthed to the attendant that died Fremen in that scene.
Okay.
When they're talking about why all of these Harkonnen groups are just getting KIA'd and MIA'd.
Okay. I was just saying, in any case, the Harkonnens have a bad habit of killing anyone who disagrees with them, which is actually their biggest weakness. Because you get stronger and you get smarter by listening to and digesting people's critiques.
Yeah.
That school of management hasn't really reached Gaty Prime yet.
they're killing their best talent just for speaking up.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a high turnover rate over there.
Mm.
Well, I initially thought it was the same guy who got his face slammed into the console. And I thought Harkey Keitel was coming back to us. that person, the very dumb joke I made a number of episodes ago, where that person who got his face slammed looks a whole lot like Harvey Keitel.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was him initially. And yeah, I thought it was coming back. I got really excited for about a split second.
No, I think he was very definitively dead way before this scene happened.
Yeah, so. I know he was, but... I can hope.
But there was a case.
Weirder things have happened.
I gotta kill your hope. Right?
I know someone who was a background actor in RRR, that movie, you know, the Indian movie. And I saw him dressed in different ways. I saw him die like four different times in that movie, like with a mustache or with glasses. Sure. I wouldn't know.
Just... So it's possible, John. Anything can happen.
Sure.
So this this commander is telling Rabban, you should not leave the security perimeter. And Rabban responds with telling him that the rats are already inside, yelling at him, I should say. Mm-hmm.
Security perimeter, they're already inside.
And that the Fremen demon might be with them. So clearly a reference to Paul. I tried to search for that phrase, the Fremen demon, in the book to see if that's something that they pulled, and I couldn't see anything. Nowhere is Paul referred to as the demon. He's definitely referred to in like mythic stories amongst the Harkonnens, but not specifically as the Fremen demon.
I don't mind them spelling it out like that. It does. I think this movie does a great job. And, you know, I brought this up with Irulan before, but especially when we see Irulan look at Paul at the end, you can see, like, this dude's terrifying. You know, we're like, Timothy Chalamet, come on, that's Wonka. You know, but they do a good job of painting, like, why this reputation that's built around him.
What's this skinny white boy doing out in the desert?
Yeah, they're going through. They're all loading up in their ornithopters, and
well, you missed an important part. So, security perimeter. They're already inside. Another one of the goons says the Fremen demon might be with them, and then Rabban responds with, "I hope so. Today, Muad'Dib died."
That's super cute, dude. Super cute. I'm sure.
Yeah. You got this.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, man, this is all you. But then, yes, like you were saying, we cut to, you know, watching more and more of them, you know, like scramble to get into ornithopters. And we get, for the first time in Dune Part 1 or Part 2, an actual translation of Harkonnen speech.
Hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. I thought, no. Okay. This is not the first time we've talked about this. I thought that the radio was translated.
It was not.
It was not translated.
Yeah.
Okay. My bad.
Yep. This was our first translation of Harkonnen's speech.
Okay.
And it says, "The rats are traveling fast. Move, move." And then we cut to a very, to me at least, Apocalypse Now inspired scene of these ornithopters all flying over the desert at twilight.
Yeah, I was half expecting Fortunate Son to be playing in the background of this.
I do so love the design in the movies, though. The fact that they look like dragonflies. Yeah. It's so cool and so practical and smart.
Yeah.
Smart.
Once again, we're taking designs from nature cues. And, you know, that's one of the ones that fits, I think, the most, like, realistic description of ornithopters. Because... Well, they're a lot better than the ones from the Lynch movie.
Well, and Alicia, you can, I think you can maybe give some insight into this since you're reading the books now, but we don't get really a detailed description of how ornithopters are supposed to look.
I have looked this up in the past just because people were complaining about it in the movies. I was like, how can you be complaining about it? And I think the biggest thing is there are different models. You know, it's more like a type of craft than a specific model. But I don't see anything that contradicts this because we do get descriptions where they're like folding their wings and diving and things like that. So to me, this fits perfectly.
Yeah. And dragonflies just look really cool.
Yeah. And dragonflies look cool.
Now. Yeah. Now, speaking of different models, we do see one of those different models here. We see a much fatter, much more bumblebee appearance looking ornithopter rather than a sleek dragonfly. And this, I'm gonna sneak in my art and soul minutes or art and soul notes here in the middle of this minute because I think it's relevant. According to the production team, this was referred to as the Orny Bee. Like most other,
sure it was.
Yeah, no, that's what they. I'll pull it up in the book right here.
So this horny bee, horny. Yeah, I know, I know.
Oh,
I know.
You got to say it like you're British.
British. Well, funny enough, it was created by BGI Supplies, which is a British company.
So it probably was the horny bee. Maybe misquoted them.
It was a completely built-to-scale ornithopter.
Mm.
Ended up weighing in at 20 tons, which was twice the weight of all of the other ornithopter models that were used. In fact, it was so heavy that it required a 500-ton crane to lift and move. All of the shots inside the Orny Bee were all done in Budapest. But they would do some shots inside and some shots outside. But it was so large that it could not be moved in through soundstage doors as a single complete product. So they would have to tear down and rebuild whenever they would move it inside or outside.
Interesting.
All of the lighting for this was done with, you know, actual like lights built into the consoles and all the like instruments and everything inside the ornithopter. But then all of the exterior to the ornithopter lighting was a giant wall of over 600 LED panels that was used to best replicate the lighting conditions that they would have out in the desert whenever they were shooting. They wanted to have as much of it practical as possible, but because of the weight, they couldn't put it on any kind of, you know, hydraulic gimbal system or anything without like having some serious safety concerns. So any kind of like gravity shifting or movement was done with the classic 1, 2, 3, everyone shift to the left, everyone shift to the right kind of thing.
The Star Trek method.
Right.
Yeah. The Star Trek method of G-force manipulation.
Simulation, yeah.
So
I love it.
So that was a little bit about the Orny Bee.
Yeah.
That we see, which is Rabin's personal ornithopter. Is a bit more clunky than a regular one.
Right.
What else is clunky is the Harkonnen suit design. I really love the look of that. You guys, I know you've talked about it in other minutes, but I didn't get to talk about it. So I love
talking about it. So go for it.
I love, first of all, it's probably in part to make them look inhuman so we can, vilify them more easily. But it is also logical in the sense that it protects their necks to have this sort of necklessness. But then it also shows their restrictions and lack of freedom of movement,
Right.
Yeah.
So it's really communicating a lot.
They're big fans of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Why? I don't get the reference.
There's a Wu-Tang Clan song called Protect Your Neck.
Oh, okay.
You gotta protect your neck.
Oh, see? All right, that's fair. But I think that's it communicates so much through the design. Whereas the Fremen make themselves much more vulnerable physically, but also they have so much, there's so much more freedom in general and freedom of movement and litheness that it compensates for that, where actually they end up winning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you recently watched not just these minutes, but the whole movie. So you saw like how clunky Harkonnen combat is compared to Fremen combat and everything. That was one of the design philosophies that they had, and they also wanted to talk a lot in Art and Soul about how they wanted to also make them feel not entirely acclimated to Arrakis, even though they've been there for 80 years, still gathering spice and everything, but still very foreign in their like spacesuit design rather than something that was actually made for the planet itself. So it's really cool, and it also leans further into the Harkonnen aesthetic as a whole of bug inspired.
Yeah. This is what I was gonna add to this, is that it just makes them look more beetle
like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like even their face shields are giant, what look like singular bug eyes, and the patterns that are in that are like etched into the glass are all hexagonal in nature, just like bug eyes are. So
yeah,
it's really cool. Like the attention to detail that is put into this movie is insane. And I love being able to go through minute by minute because you really catch on all those small things.
Yeah.
And like not sponsored at all, but if you ever get a chance to not just you, Alicia, but just like anyone that's listening, but if you ever if you ever get a chance to grab any of the Art and Soul books, there's so much stuff in there that like I wish I could show on this show that really dives into how they evolved the concepts and everything for things like the armors and stuff like that. So
yeah,
big fan of all of that.
They better get the Oscar recognition. They got it for the first movie, and I think they deserved it more for the second. But everyone says they're waiting for the third. So I hope, first of all, that Villeneuve nails the third movie, obviously. So. but I hope that they get recognition for it this time, too, because just the level of craft.
They were definitely recognized at the Oscars, but not nearly enough. So back into the ornithopter, we do get to see them. I think this is the first time that we get to see an alive Harkonnen without his mask on.
Mm.
Like in the full still suit, alive.
He's not feeling so good.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the other ones that we saw earlier at the start of the movie, they were alive. They weren't doing good.
They were barely alive. They were having the water sucked out of their bodies.
Yeah, they weren't doing so hot, but they were technically alive.
the guy moved his hand. He tried to stop Chani.
He tried to stop Chani. And like, get out of here. I love that, how she just bapped his hand away.
She's like, I do not care that's a person.
And truth be told, this one that we see in the ornithopter is not that much better.
He's not doing great.
He's a little bit. No, not at all.
This scene kind of reminds me of talking about like all of the Harkonnen soldiers just in the ornithopter waiting for whatever combat is approaching them. Very like reminiscent of, you know, the very opening scenes of like Saving Private Ryan almost.
Stop reading my notes, man.
I'm sorry. Exactly what I had written. but it's that same just like.
Well, I had the Band of Brothers initial plane drop, the D-Day drop scene.
Yep.
And the Saving Private Ryan beach scene, which is like also D-Day, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's where my mind went too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we get to see the pilots of the Orny Bee.
I want a VR headset like this.
No, you don't.
Okay. Just kidding.
Yeah. So I have a note about it from Art and Soul.
Okay.
Does it stick into your eyes?
It goes into your eye sockets.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't want that. You don't want that VR headset. Yeah, it's not bee specific, but the note in Art and Soul says that the helmet worn by the scanner operator plugs into the back of the operator's eye sockets.
Yeah.
So
I don't like that.
Yep. Yeah. One more fun fact for you.
I don't like eye trauma.
Mm-mm.
I have had it. It's not fun.
I've had laser shot in my eyes. I know.
Yeah, that's LASIK. That's. I wouldn't call that trauma. That's very controlled.
I paid for it. I paid for them to do that.
Yeah.
No, eye trauma freaks me out. It is not a fun thing. So that gives me, I just felt my spine get all tingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched you get very physically uncomfortable as I read that. So yep,
don't like it.
Yep. But then there's also just another pilot with a pretty, you know, standard headset that you would expect from any other pilot.
Did it go into what that headset does? Because in the Harkonnen ornithopter scene where Jessica and Paul are getting dropped off into the desert, the pilot doesn't have one of those on him.
No, this one, we don't get anything in this minute about that, because okay. All we get is the shots of the inside of all the, you know, all the goons nervously waiting for action.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Rabin, who's looking out over the horizon screaming, "Where is he?" the operator says, "Still negative, my lord." And then Rabin screams, "Why do I have to do everything myself?" And then we end our minute cutting to a goon as he's beginning to spew out white liquid from his mouth, and that's the end of our minute.
It makes me laugh every time I see him do that, and it made me laugh that the minute cut off there.
it's such a,
it might be the best ending of a week we've had.
It's so absolutely the best ending of a week that we've had, like, and it's going to be a great start to next week too.
It just finishes that
because it's just the first little bit and then our minute cuts.
All right. Do you want my hotter Rabin take?
Yeah. Please, yes. I was going to
hit us
ask.
With the hottest of takes.
So, okay. So Rabin says here, "Why do I have to do everything myself?" And I'm like, pray tell, Rabin, what exactly have you done yourself except yell at everybody? And my hottest take is that I think they should have just cut this character, and instead they should have started the last movie to build more intrigue between Fayed Rautha and his uncle. So they could have laid the parallels between him and Paul better rather than just like rushing it in the back half of this movie. And then, yeah, we should have gotten Howitt there playing his games with them as well. And I think that would have added more than Rabin added to this story, personally.
I agree.
I disagree with none of that.
Okay. Double negatives, but okay. I like that a lot. I feel like they had to tie him up or tie his storyline up, I guess.
Hmm.
But they could have done that. They could have done that elsewhere. In terms of what has he done himself, he did chop the heads off all those people.
He did. Yeah.
Himself.
With a very janky ass motion of just
just one strike per blow, I guess, but that's about all we've seen him do. In every other scene
we've seen him stare at things menacingly and like walk very heavily, and you know
he was afraid to go through that one door.
Yeah.
And then he looks stupid in front of his uncle. So that's about all we've seen him do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like if your bratty cousin is a sadist. So, yeah, fun.
Pretty much, yeah.
Super helpful to the family.
Well, they described him as like a blunt tool mm-hmm. in the books. I'm pretty sure that's
yeah, and that's conveyed.
That may not be 100%
yeah,
accurate.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah. I think introducing Fade earlier would have been a much better decision.
Better, but also, like you said, with the context of them not having been greenlit for part two, which, like, let's be real, it probably would have been greenlit regardless. Yeah,
I mean, come on. It's Dune and it's
unless it was just, like, a complete abject failure at the box office.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I don't know. I can't think of, like, why they would have wanted to hold Fade until, like, the back third of the movie.
Yeah,
I think even when we were going through like the initial like first time ever seeing this movie in theaters, I was expecting Fade to be there earlier and like so mm-hmm. much earlier because he is there. He's in there like in the first third of the book, or sorry, well, the first third of what this movie covers, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I do my miniseries adaptation, then I will draw very direct parallels between Fade Valtha and Paul.
Yeah. We should have had a introduction to Fade and Rabin like we did in the 84 Lynch film with the
with winged underwear
juice boxes and everything.
I was waiting for the winged underwear. Where is it even the same character?
I want a very sinewy looking Sting.
I want Sting and Messiah. Give me Sting and Messiah.
I mean, why not?
Had they got Sting to play the Emperor, that would have been amazing.
Yes.
Callback. Honestly?
Better.
Okay.
He probably would have done a good job, too. Not saying Christopher Walken didn't. I'm not saying he did a great job either.
Yeah.
When it comes to the diction thing, that's where it's like, we need him to not talk like Christopher Walken and to talk like somebody else.
More. Yeah. That line always sticks with me.
Yeah, I think Sting would have been a great emperor.
Mm-hmm.
But in fairness, Artensoul talks about how they wanted the emperor to look and feel very feeble and very like losing control. And I think Walken did a good enough job with that.
I don't think he's feeble.
He's a big name.
Yeah, he's a big name. They're all big names.
Name. Yeah.
Movies full of big names.
Well, unfortunately, that's the end of our big minute.
So at the end of each week, before we get into ratings, mm-hmm. Elise, do you have anything else, any other notes on this particular minute?
No, just that was a great way to go out. Like a drunk girl on a Saturday night.
Me on every Saturday night.
In the back of an Uber.
So at the end of every week, we have to give it a rating. We have to. It's law.
Mm-hmm. Except for the 2 weeks that one of us missed giving a rating.
Well, we got called out on it.
Yeah, we did.
It's Dune Minute law. We have to give it a rating. So Alicia, as our guest, we're going to put you on the spot first. Out of 0 to 10 Shy Haludes, what would you rate this week?
I think I'm going to go with, because like I said, it's a bridging collection of scenes, like an eclectic little collection of scenes, but it is also a collection of turning points. So I think I'm between a 7.5 and an 8. Let's go with an 8. Why not? Just for the whoa in the womb moment. Yeah. AKA the comforting hand.
Sure. I'm going to be a little lower at about a 7, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we have the context of
what all the other
a 9 or a 10 Shai Hulud week looks like for us.
That is your rating. It's not a rating. You don't have to base it off the same stuff.
That said, I do agree. Like, it is a very important week. We get to like see essentially, like I said earlier, the Paul to Jessica and the Paul to Alia confrontation. Mm-hmm. We get Worm. which automatically is like a plus one modifier.
Did they show any hole in this week?
No, we didn't get any hole this week. Okay. But we did get a goon. We did get a spitting goon right at the end. So, and we got Rabin, you know, yelling and doing his, you know, Rabin things.
I mean, it started. We started with Paul and Chani, through Paul and Jessica, through Worm Action to Rabin. It's been like a whole collection of. Potpourri.
Sorry, did you say Paul and or Paul in Chani?
Whoa, both.
Yeah. We didn't see past shoulders. We don't know.
That's up for you to decide.
It's a heavy conversation to have mid.
That's what she said.
Hey. Sorry, you got to get a dick joke in somewhere.
Oh, we went all week without it. So 7 for you, John?
Yeah, 7 for me.
7 for you. Okay. Yeah. I think I was going to come in on the higher end of things as well for mine. I don't know if I'd push it up to an 8, but I will give it a 7.5.
All right.
For all the things that we mentioned, there's so many things in this minute. They go by quick, but there's so much.
It's a dense week. Mm-hmm. And Alicia, thank you for, you know, putting up with the density of this week, but I knew that you would have wanted to focus on a Rebecca Ferguson heavy week. And unfortunately, the only other week I think that would have really been great for you, we have another guest for. So that one was spoken for a little earlier, but I'm glad that we were able to get you some Rebecca Ferguson time, because obviously all of your work with Will Shift Dust. We can tie that together a little bit.
Right. So. Yeah. So if anyone wants to hear more Rebecca Ferguson talk, we've covered all of Silo on Will Shift Dust. And now we are currently covering Dune, the book, probably as this comes out.
I can personally attest as a independent fan of the show, it's really good. Like I was listening to the show before I ever even met you.
So. Thank you very much.
Before we even started the Dune Minute.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So,
cool. Well, anything else before we wrap up the week?
That's it for us. As always, we have all of our social media on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. We'll have links to all of Alicia and the rest of the Lorehounds content available in the description as well. Alicia, once again, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciated this time, and we will be back next week with more spitting goons.
An explosive entry to
an
next week.
An explosive entry into the Dune Minute podcast.
Wait, do you have a guest next week?
We don't.
No, okay. No, I was going to say, I would love if somebody just got the minute, didn't watch the rest of the movie, just started it with that.
just started on that. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, let's see if we can line someone.
All right.
All right, cool. We will see y'all next week, and have a good one. See ya.
See ya.
All right. Bye.